Well, the last year and a half has been a crazy ride, for sure, when it comes to interest rates. The Fed raised rates a whopping 11 times between 22 and 23, all in an attempt to slow inflation, which had skyrocketed after the pandemic, in order to try to bring it in line with their target inflation rate of 2%. More recently, we had been seeing a decrease in inflation, to which the Fed had been signaling that rates should eventually be coming down again at some time here in the future. But this whole situation is so fluid, and interest rates continue to be affected by current events happening in real time. Welcome to Deals in Development, a real estate podcast from the Dykema Law Firm. I'm your host, Dan Scherbaum, leader of Dykema's Real Estate Practice Group. For more episodes, you can find us at dykemapodcast.com or by searching Deals in Development wherever you get your podcasts. With interest rates in the news on a consistent basis and the Federal Reserve meeting just 3 weeks ago, today we'll provide one lender's perspective of where we've been and a forecast of lending trends for the balance of 2024. With that, I'm pleased to introduce our guest, Dave Scaff of Old National Bank. Dave, welcome to the show. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Thanks, Dan. I appreciate you having me on. Well, I've been in commercial banking my whole career for the past 35 plus years with a primary focus on commercial real estate. I joined United Bank and Trust here in Ann Arbor back in 2008. And in 2014, UBT merged with Old National. So I've been here for about 15 plus years with the combined organizations. I oversee investment commercial real estate lending for the Ann Arbor office and also originate loans and maintain my own book of business, where my focus now generally is on deals and deal sizes of $10 million and above.
So you mentioned your former work with United Bank and Trust, Dave. That's been about 10 years ago since UBT merged with Old National. Some of our listeners might not know much about Old National, only because it's a bank that, maybe nicely stays out of the news. Can you tell us a little bit about Old National Bank?
Sure. So Old National is actually a 190-year-old regional bank. It's headquartered in Evansville, Indiana. We merged with First Midwest Bank out of Chicago in 2022, pretty much doubling the size of the bank. And so we're now sitting at about $49 billion in assets. We have offices located throughout the Midwest and currently have an 11-state footprint as far as our CRE, commercial real estate lending. Our value proposition is that we provide the high-touch service in the feel of a community bank, but with the firepower and the offerings of a larger bank. Something somewhat more unique to us, we don't have any formal loan committees. We do have weekly what we call pre-flight meetings, where we get our lenders and our credit team together to vet deals over $25 million. But loan approvals are all obtained via signature authorities rather than loan committees. And that makes us pretty nimble and responsive for our clients. One of the things I would say that we sell is what I call certainty of execution. So for example, I'll issue a term sheet to a client on a deal only after I've consulted with my credit partners. We confirm that we're comfortable with the deal structure and the cash flow. And then once that term sheet has been delivered, I'm always going to expect to close. And you asked about, again, kind of what we're doing on the commercial real estate front. There are certain sectors that we like a lot and are very active in, like multifamily and industrial, for example, and others that we aren't active in at all, like hotels and hospitality.
Dave, you mentioned, I guess, a couple of follow-ups. The vetting of deals over $25 million, what is the larger side of a loan that you will do at Old National Bank? Is it how far in excess of $25 million can Old National go?
Yeah, I mean, we have the ability to do deals, again, depending on how we assess the risk of the transaction, to be very large deals. We could be north of $45 million. The question more becomes how much of it would we want to hold ourselves and how much exposure we want to have. And so as we get into larger deal sizes, sometimes what we'll do is we'll invite other banks in to partner with us to offload some of that exposure and just allow us to have more dry powder to do more deals.
And the focus on multifamily and industrial, is that a product of the current post, you know, the post-COVID environment, or historically is old National Bank typically steered away from hotel and retail deals?
Yeah, no, great question. It's exactly that. It's nothing new with the pandemic. We have always had an interest in multifamily and industrial deals, in particular Old National. So that was pre-pandemic and post-pandemic, something that we think we understand a lot and do a lot of. The bank was never active in hospitality lending, so that's not a change with the pandemic. Though during the pandemic, a number of lenders that were exposed with hospitality that got kind of knocked to their knees, that brought a lot of business our way because our lending window remained open and active.
Great. Thanks for that background, Dave. So we brought you here for the podcast to talk about interest rates. And they, as I said at the opening, are in the news on a consistent basis. Give us a quick, I guess, summary. What's going on with interest rates? What are the key factors that might result in interest rates dropping, rising, or staying steady?
Well, the last year and a half has been a crazy ride, for sure, when it comes to interest rates. The Fed raised rates a whopping 11 times between 22 and 23, all in an attempt to slow inflation, which had skyrocketed after the pandemic, in order to try to bring it in line with their target inflation rate of 2%. More recently, we had been seeing a decrease in inflation, to which the Fed had been signaling that rates should eventually be coming down again sometime here in the future. But this whole situation is so fluid, and interest rates continue to be affected by current events happening in real time. So, for example, at the beginning of the month, we had the recent release of the jobs report showing that the U.S. economy had added 353,000 new jobs in January, way more than what had been expected, and which the Fed was saying, hey, we might need to wait to cut rates if the economy is still too hot, as the concern would be that inflation would be creeping back up again. And sure enough, just last week, the latest and greatest inflation report was released and saying that inflation had increased a little more than expected in January. So instead of rates dropping, we saw them increasing right back up again.
So this might be an obvious answer to an obvious question that I'm going to pose to you. But as a lender, then, it's easier for you to make loans when the expectation is that the interest rates are going to remain steady or drop. When there's the potential for interest rates to go up, does that make your job just a little bit harder?
For sure. It's something that we have to game plan more for. So again, the cost of capital is going to be going up. And so the debt service on a loan, the amount of principal and interest payments that are due every month, that amount's going to go up. So the cash flow on the loan has to be enough to be able to service the debt at that higher interest rate level. And so what that might mean is that all things being equal, we have to change the structure of the loan to accommodate and maybe not even lending as much dollars to make sure that we're not over-leveraged and we're lending at a comfortable amount.
And as you said, the interest rate is right now very fluid. So it gets affected by world events, economic data, the Federal Reserve, any number of things can make the interest rate fluctuate, right?
Correct. All these items out in the world, they all influence what's going to happen with rates and where we're going on that path.
So this is a, you know, not new situation, but I do think that for those of us in commercial real estate, following the recession of 2008 up until, you know, post-COVID times, interest rates were historically low. And I think those of us working in the space got super comfortable with those low interest rates. And it was a great time for both lenders and developers and those of us who represent developers. So yeah, I am interested in your perspective.
Yeah, I think some context is important here. So from a historical viewpoint, the ultra low rates that we saw during the early pandemic years, those were more the anomaly rather than what we're seeing now in the current rate environment, which are really more in line with historical averages. I mean, sure, if someone offered you a 3% rate, you'd smile and you'd take it, right? But interest rates that low just aren't normal.
So I want to expand on that a little bit. Can you give some additional perspective in your 30 plus years of lending, some of what you've seen over the course of your career with respect to interest rates?
Yeah, look, nobody game planned for interest rates to go up 5% in a year like we saw in 2023. You know, again, deals were still getting done last year in the higher interest rate environment. But the reality was that, like I was saying just a moment ago, more equity maybe was required to go into the deals in order to have them pencil out and adequately cash flow to get the deal done. So deals, say, that historically may have been done at maybe 75 to 80% advances were instead getting done sometimes more like 60 to 65%. So where, say, loan to value or loan to cost ratios may have in the past been more of a driver of the sizing of a deal, now it's really driven by debt service coverage ratios and what loan size the cash flow can comfortably support. That's really the A number one to get a deal done.
And what does that do to your, you know, requiring more equity? What does that do to your pool of borrowers? I assume that that reduces your pool of borrowers and results in there maybe being less room for new developers that don't have access to equity or need access to private investors with deep pockets in order to make a deal happen.
Yeah, it definitely puts a premium on what kind of liquidity a potential borrower has or needs to have. And that's probably to be expected in the world of these larger, you know, commercial real estate transactions that I'm involved with financing. I'd say that the profile for my ideal client would be first people with good character and proven ownership experience or management of a larger commercial real estate portfolio. Now, I always like to say that we work with professionals, not hobbyists, in terms of what we do. And people who have liquidity to invest in deals, deposit funds in the bank, and have the ability to ride out any hiccups that might occur along the way. That's kind of just from 20,000 feet, just sort of a general profile of the folks that we're working with.
Now, going back to the historical low interest rates that, you know, in our practice on the commercial real estate side seem to open the door for younger, less established developers who could come up with the equity in the ratio levels that you were describing that didn't require, you know, so much equity. We're seeing less of that now, obviously, you know, less risk taking, less, I guess, involvement by developers who are new to this, as you say, maybe they're starting off as hobbyists with an idea of turning it into a, you know, long-term project. Do you have any advice for, you know, the folks that are, unfortunately, for now, sitting on the sidelines as younger developers? You know, what would you suggest they do? It's a little more difficult for them right now.
Yeah, no, right. Younger developers sometimes are getting their start in the business working for other larger, already established development outfits. They're seeing and learning how things get done. They're making connections. They're possibly cutting their teeth on some smaller outside projects on their own. And then they may be able to partner up or go out and start some projects on their own. And of course, establishing good banking contacts along the way doesn't hurt either.
Yeah, for sure. And so, you know, again, going back to, you know, the lower interest rate time periods, I used to see come across my desk on a consistent basis, loans with variable interest rates. The borrowers were willing to take the risk that the low interest rate that they started with was not going to suddenly jump out of the roof. And you mentioned the 5% in one single year being unusual. And anybody who is on a variable rate deal when that happened certainly wasn't prepared for that. But are you still doing, are you still seeing loans with variable interest rates, or are those at this very moment less common?
Yeah, no, that's a great question, Dan. You know, there are certain types of loans, like say lines of credit or construction loans, where variable rates are typical. But in the recent higher rate environment, that's also been problematic. So take construction loans, for example. With the cost of capital going up so much where rates have moved, and we talked about that big 5% jump in a given year, we saw that there were many projects that they burned right through their interest reserves way faster than planned and well before the completion of their project. So wherever we can, we're going to try to take interest rate risk off of the table. And one way to do that is we lock in rates via interest rate swaps. This is really typical where we're dealing with term loans on stabilized commercial real estate projects. So say for property purchases or refinances of existing debt, wherever we can lock up that rate, we're going to try to do it.
Yeah, it makes sense for both parties, I think.
Right.
For sure. So given the volatility that we've been talking about with interest rates, have there been any other changes within Old National to your process that are a result of that volatility?
Yeah, definitely. So one of the main things to come out of last year was what I'll call a re-emphasis on the importance of deposits to a banking relationship. So just to remember, deposits are the primary source of funding for our loans at the bank. So having a full relationship with the bank, with deposits being the most fundamental piece, is absolutely key. So we're back to now how I remember, you know, banking to be 30-some years ago, where there's an expectation that the client's going to be bringing in some kind of minimum amount of deposits based upon the size of the loan being requested, say 10% as a loose rule of thumb. This, again, it underscores the importance of the client being able to show a good amount of liquidity when they come to knock on the door of the bank. We're going to want to see that they have enough liquidity to, A, inject a meaningful amount of equity into the deal, but also to deposit funds in the bank, and that they have enough cushion of liquidity and outside cash flow, maybe with their global empire, to navigate any unexpected curveballs that might come their way during the course of a project.
And I guess from your perspective, too, having the deposit requirement, and you know, it is another opportunity for the bank to deepen its relationship with the borrower. You know, you had mentioned that you like to have long-term clients. The one-off clients are fine for sure, but you know, a little extra in the deposit relationship allows for that relationship to deepen, I guess.
Absolutely, and it's really, relationship is the name of the game. And so what we consider ourselves not to be is transactional lenders, you know, so we sort of do a one-off deal here or there. There's no relationship sort of built in with that. We want to get to know our clients and our clients to get to know us. But we also look at it through the lens of a risk paradigm. So that first deal is going to be the riskiest deal that we do because we don't have any experience working with a client. They don't have the experience working with us. Everybody's feeling everybody else out on the situation. But once you do that first deal and everybody performs and handles things as agreed and as expected, you see the expertise at play and at work, we're of a mind to say, hey, how do we put more dollars out to this great relationship? How do we expand this relationship? How can we deepen that relationship? Again, I know for some banks, it's the more dollars you put out, it's considered to be a riskier relationship because we just have more dollars, you know, that are out there stacking up. We look at it a little bit differently. We would rather put more dollars and expand a wider relationship with the same proven operator. We look at that to be a lower risk endeavor than, again, a bunch of one-off sort of deals out there with no relationship.
Interesting. Thanks for sharing that perspective. So we're coming to the end of the podcast, and this is maybe the question that if you've stuck with us for this podcast, you're going to want to know the answer to, and it's a tough one for Dave. Dave, how do you see 2024 playing out? We're now at the end of February. Back in November, December of 2023, there was optimism that the Fed was going to be in a position to start cutting rates and that that would then spur more loan activity and development, all of these good things for all sides, bank, developer, lawyers. That said, doesn't sound like the rate cuts are going to be happening as soon as we expected or had hoped. And interested in your perspective and whether the fact that rate cuts might not happen at all this year, is that going to change your lending practices at all?
Well, you're right. You saved the biggest curveball for last. This is where we have to dust off crystal balls. And it's a great question. And in all candor, I will tell you, Dan, that my crystal ball has probably never been as murky as it is right now, looking out ahead into 2024, than really going into any year that I can remember. You know, I think that the last direction provided by the Fed was that there were to be maybe 3 rate cuts this year, likely occurring later on in the year. But look, we are in a highly charged election year. We have multiple wars going and conflicts going on around the world. And the Fed is in the middle of all this, trying to land the plane and tame inflation. And everybody is wondering if we'll fall into a recession or navigate to a safe landing. Our lending window here at ONB is open, and we are continuing to look to make good loans, expand relationships, and bring more deposit dollars to the bank. If rates do indeed come down, what that will mean is that deals should be able to cash flow more comfortably, clients will be able to lock in at lower rates, and the amount of borrower equity needed to make a deal work may be reduced. It also means that the carrying costs for borrowers with variable rates, as you mentioned, on existing loans and projects will be eased, making their global cash flow position stronger. So a ton of variables that are out there as we look forward into 2024. And as we've been in the past, we all just need to be nimble and just sort of roll with the punches as they come.
Sounds like the best bet then is to don't count on anything as it relates to rates.
Yeah, like I said, if I could only have a clearer crystal ball, but I don't think they sell those.
For sure. Dave, thank you so much for your time this afternoon. And thanks, everyone, for listening. Again, my name is Dan Sherbaum. Again, thanks, Dave, for joining us. And we'll look forward to seeing you next time on Deals and Developments.
Thanks so much.